important to us is the fact that people with disabilities are often negatively and welfarously portrayed in the media. It's very often seen as a charity case, as somebody that should be pitied rather than a rights-based issue. And then, of course, the disability sector and people with disabilities already have the information available to expand disability information in the media. That means that we are able to provide content that can change these perceptions. And I want to end the presentation with a quote by Steve Krug. And he said, the one argument for accessibility that doesn't get made nearly often enough is how extraordinarily better it makes some people's lives. How many opportunities do we have to dramatically improve people's lives just by doing our job a little better? I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beck, for the presentation and your brief introduction. I can guarantee you that members do have your CV. They've had access to that, and therefore they would also rely on that, including your presentation. We really appreciate your presentation at this point. Without a waste of time, honourable members, I will follow almost the same order. Starting now with Honorable Gumbu, if he's got any question to ask. And Honorable Gumbu, I'm sure you can hear, will be followed by Honorable McKenzie. We have Honorable Faku, Honorable Majozi, and then it will be Honorable Kubeka in that order. Honorable Gumbu, do you have any question that you want to ask at this point?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Ms. Marina Clark. Can you hear me?
I can hear you clearly, Honorable yes. Gumbu.
Yes.
Yeah, I was a good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And how are you today?
I am extremely well, despite the cold weather in Cape Town where I live.
Oh, okay.
So anybody to the north of us, get your warm woolies out. The weather is coming your way.
Okay. Excellent. In terms of the presentation, Ms. Clark, you are telling us that you are the chair of the disability, one disability organization. I just want to understand how will you are, because obviously you are an experienced person in that area. I just want to understand how your experience of working with disability people will contribute in changing the MDDA and why. If you can just respond to that question.
Certainly. Thank you for the question, Honourable Gumbu. Let me first clarify that the South African Disability Alliance is not an organisation. It is an alliance of 22 national disability organisations that meet. It's not a juristic person in own right, but it is a forum where disability organisations get together to discuss issues of mutual concern and interest. So that's the first thing that I need to clarify. Secondly, as I've highlighted in my presentation, persons with disabilities are often underrepresented, and we find this true in Parliament as well. If we equate with the fact that 7.5% of South Africans are people with disabilities, then people with disabilities must equally be represented in structures at that level. How can I contribute to it? I've been in the disability sector formally since 1990. I spent 15 years with the South African National Council for the Blind before I moved to Epilepsy South Africa in 2005. I have gained wide experience both nationally and internationally in terms of disability rights and was in fact part of the delegation that went to the United Nations a few years ago when the South African report on the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities were considered. So I believe that I have gained a lot of experience in terms of disability rights. I am a disability activist, and I believe very passionately in the rights of people with disability in terms of accessibility and being able to be part of the community in which they function. So my contribution would be from a disability angle and improving awareness and knowledge about people with disabilities, their needs and their abilities.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Honorable Kumbu. Honorable McKenzie.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mrs. Clark. Thanks very much for coming through. Certainly on such a cold day. Mrs. Clark, in terms of the MDDA mandate, let's assume that, as you know, the country and the world, in fact, is in very, very challenging and tight economic times. Let's assume there was no budget available at all for the MDDA, except to pay directors' fees. What would you do in the organization, given that paradigm, to meet the MDDA's mandate of creating voices in the community? So in other words, what would you do with no money, with no budget, to meet that objective? And then as a second question, can you name one or two state-owned entities or state-owned companies that you could envisage the MDDA linking up with synergistically? And how could you leverage that partnership, if you like, strategic partnership, to again meet the outcomes of the MDDA mandate? Thank you, Mr. Clark. I'm sorry, it is a fairly difficult question, but you are first in the day and the mind is still there. Thank you very much,
Honourable McKenzie. You know, there's some advantages to being first, but there's also some advantages to being last. The advantage to being first is that everybody is fresh and everybody is still thinking very quickly. I'm glad you asked the question about what would you do without a budget. Having spent most of my career in the nonprofit sector, I am certainly used to doing things without a budget. I'm always surprised when I look at the budgets that the corporate sector has available for simple things like arranging flowers for a venue, for an event, I'm sorry, when we try and put an event together with no money whatsoever. So I'm quite used to that kind of scenario. I think what's important to understand is that the right of access to information of persons with disabilities is not a nice to have. It is an imperative. It is a basic human right. By denying somebody access to information because they are blind or because they are deaf is right up there with a constitutional anomaly, because the right to access and prevention of discrimination on the basis of disability is contained in the Bill of Rights, Chapter 2 of our Constitution. So that's the first thing. South Africa was one of the first countries to ratify the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities together with the optional protocol. So again, our government has made it very clear that the rights of persons with disabilities is a matter of importance and a serious issue to them. Otherwise, they would not have ratified it. And the same goes for several other international instruments. So when it comes to things like, for example, the SABC, you asked for some examples of statutory bodies or government agencies. The SABC, as a national broadcaster, has a duty. It's a duty bearer in terms of making information accessible. So there isn't really a question of if you have money available. Many things can be done at a very cost-efficient ratio. For example, to add a screen to a program that says this concerns people with epilepsy because it has flashing images is really not an expensive thing to do. To have subtitling is not an expensive thing to do. It can be done quite easily. So many of the issues that we've raised can be done at a very low cost, but would make a huge difference in the lives of people. I also think that the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Communication, who has the oversight role, and the Department of Communication obviously have a major role to play, and that already has a budgetary allocation. it's very seldom that there's a situation or a scenario when there's absolutely no money involved. There's always a little money to be found. And I think also that if we leverage the money that is available, we'll be able to do a lot more with it. So in short, I don't think money is a major stumbling block. It's always nice to have lots of it. But the NPO sector and the disability sector has survived for basically as long as this country has survived without much money. You know, there's still a lot of nonprofit organizations in our sector that receive no funding from government that generate their own funding. So I don't see money as a major stumbling block. And then, as I say, the duty bearers have a duty to bear, and they need to allocate resources to make this a reality. I trust that answers your question, Honourable Mackenzie.
Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie. I will now take Honourable Fab.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Fab. Hi, Mr. Fab. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Honourable Fab.
Okay, thank you for coming through. I'm looking at your CV and I'm very much impressed with the skills that you have developed through the past years, especially that I see that you've been through the ILO Master of Trainers, training of masters. I see that. I see that you've been through the SYP project. I know this is a very good program. I just want to ask you with regard to the current funding model that MDDA is offering, if given an opportunity to be a board member, what can be done differently to the current model that MDDA is using? My second question would be, what would be the role of MDDA in promoting community media in the digital environment? And I know that I see that you have a degree in drama. I just want to check on the cultural aspect. You know, sometimes our kids go to these models, these schools. So I believe that community radios must play a role in terms of promoting the different cultures in South Africa. So I would want to hear your views with regards to that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Faku, for those questions. Yes, I'm indeed a master trainer with the ILO and several of their entrepreneurial programs. I'm very pleased to be able to share with you that through initiatives we've started in South Africa, the ILO will now be offering some of their entrepreneurial training through an e-learning platform, which will make it far more accessible and more cost-effective, and that's being launched on the 5th of June. In fact, this very morning I spent time with a trainer and two entrepreneurs who are both blind, well, and the trainer is blind as well, in developing these kind of initiatives. When you talk about the funding model and the community media, I think it is a critical element. You know, when you talk to community media, particularly community radio, it is often the single most important source of information for people. It's often talking to people who do not have the educational opportunities that other South Africans might have had or might have at the moment. So community radio lends itself to being an educational tool. We believe, well, one of the things that we would like to see from the disability sector is that there is more attention given to disability issues. And I'm not talking about issues like social grants. I'm talking about exposing entrepreneurs with disabilities. There's some amazing work being done at community level that people are simply not aware of because they don't have the platform. They don't have a budget to engage radio or television advertising, which is often too expensive for them. But if they could have a program on a regular basis, and some community radio stations already do this, where people can actually interact, talk about their work, what their business is about, because that's the market they need to be talking to, the very community in which they operate, rather than having a national advertisement. So I think community media are very important. People are moving away more and more from print media, but radio seems to be taking on a far more important role, particularly in rural areas where there is often a lack of information, and then particularly so for persons with disabilities, and particularly for women and girls with disabilities, because they are often right at the back of the queue, marginalized by their geographic location, by their gender, and by the fact that they have a disability. So it's a triple threat for those people. I think community media can go a long way to actually making that happen. We know that there's also the importance of hearing community information in your own language. Mother tongue, very important. For example, to the best of my knowledge, there's only one radio station based in the Northern Cape that broadcasts in Khoi. And that means there's one radio station at a local level. Somebody who lives in another area, for example, in the Eastern Cape, where there's a big Khoi community, would not be able to access that information unless they're able to live stream. And again, data is expensive in South Africa. So those are the kind of changes that could be made where people could have a platform in their own language to actually move their community forward. Thank you.
Thank you. We now go to Honorable Majosi. Honorable Majosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon to honorable members, and good afternoon to you too, Ms. Clark.
Thank you.
Am I correctly?
You are indeed. Thank you so much, Honorable Majosi.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. I heard you spoke passionately about the diversity of language and also the exclusion maybe of disabled people and so forth. I want to check with you, do you think we should promote more of in the community media of this disability and languages, or should we also promote the traditions and culture of our own diverse way and religions that we believe in differently as South Africans? And maybe just to add on that also to say, with what I've said, do you see a future, do you see an MDDA board or an MDDA as an entity, as an agency, having a future in the next coming generation to promoting the community media? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Majosi. Those are some difficult and some big questions to answer. Let me start off by the question around disability and language and how that should be promoted. When you talk, for example, about deaf people, and we distinguish between the word deaf with a capital D and the word deaf with a small letter D. Deaf with a capital D is viewed not so much as a disability grouping, but more as a cultural grouping, because it's a group of people with their own language and their own culture. So they view themselves as a cultural group. And I think that's important to understand. When it comes to language, there's already South African Sign Language, but there's also things like Braille, for example, that is the language of blind people, the language in which they read and write. So those two things are critically important. When disability is portrayed in the media, and particularly at community level, it can change perceptions around disability very significantly. Because in a lot of communities, the belief still exists that people with disabilities should be excluded, should not be part of a community. For example, a person with epilepsy is often seen as somebody who is bewitched or somebody that has been cursed. And this is a very common perception. We can share that information and change things. You know, I work with people who have epilepsy, who are environmentalists, who are mountaineers, who are marathon runners, who are advocates and lawyers. You know, we know that 1 in 100 people in South Africa will have epilepsy. So if you look around you, you might find that there's people in this very subcommittee that might have epilepsy and you're simply not aware of it. So when you provide knowledge, particularly at community level, it changes people's perceptions. When you can have somebody who has a disability, who can speak out and be seen not as a burden on their community, but as somebody that can contribute to the community, the views of the community can change. Yes, there are cultural beliefs, But some cultural beliefs, I believe, should be changed, and particularly in terms of disability. You know, across Africa, we are still hearing stories about people with albinism, babies with albinism that are killed, adults with albinism who are murdered and their body parts sold in the belief that it's magic. I know a lot of people with albinism, and I promise you they might be nice people, but there's nothing magical about them. The same way that people believe that somebody with epilepsy can predict the future. You know, I'm the National Director of Epilepsy South Africa. If people with epilepsy could predict the future, I would be winning the lottery every week. No doubt about that. But it's just never happened. So, you know, it's those kind of perceptions. If you think, for example, of a young mother who might have a limited education, has a small baby that is diagnosed with epilepsy, where does she get the opportunity of learning how to deal with her child? Does she know what to do if that child has a seizure? Community radio can provide that information. In fact, we ran a program for many years with the radio station in the Northern Cape that provided exactly that. We had a weekly talk on epilepsy and other disability issues, and people could call in and ask questions and so forth. So it really was very valuable. And I would think that in that way, community radio can change people's perceptions, but still respect cultural values.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
I just wanted we were clear on this one, that on the other ones of albinos and what that is not, it's not a cultural thing, but it's a perception that people have, that if maybe they take your ear or they do what, they'll get millions or they'll... It's not cultural, that thing. It's just a mere perception and evil spirits that are happening.
I hear what you're saying, if I may respond to that. While we say it's not a cultural issue, the culture of a community is made up by the beliefs within a community. For example, there's something like a Christian culture or an Islam culture, and that's based on the things people believe to be true. Whether they are true or not is beside the point. It's what people believe to be true.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Machozi. I will now take Honorable Kubega. Honorable Kubega.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, everybody, to my colleagues, and also afternoon to Ms. Clark. Welcome to this interview. I can see you come being well prepared. You are talking with passion and when you respond to the questions. But I'm just having only two questions to you, Ms. Clark. As we find ourselves in the current socio-economic situation due to COVID-19, what do you think can MDDA do different in future with regard to assisting especially community radio to keep its audience a metla? The second question is that in 2019, ICASA had to close a number of community radio stations due to severe non-compliance with the rules. Fentec also complains about non-payment of national distribution fees by some stations. What do you think the MDDA also can do to improve that situation? Thank you, Metlak.
Thank you so much, Honorable Kubeka. Yes, again, a number of questions you're asking, and I think COVID-19 has been a great opportunity for our country to see where the shortfalls are and how we can change things. And I think it's general knowledge that after COVID-19, it will never be business as usual again. Things have changed and they will remain changed. So one of the things that is of concern is during the COVID-19 crisis, there was insufficient information and still remains insufficient information made available to people with disabilities. And I've already in my presentation highlighted some of the communication issues, particularly subtitling of major events like a speech by our president or one of the cabinet ministers, where some people simply couldn't follow it no matter how hard they tried. You're asking about how do you keep an audience? And it's a very simple situation. When people join something, be it listening to a radio station or be it joining a political party or a sports club or a church, they join because they are getting something from it. And yes, in some cases it might be tangible. They might be getting money or a job out of it. But in most cases, it's because it satisfies a need that the person has, a need to be of service to other people, or a need to contribute in some way, or a need to belong to a specific grouping. So to keep an audience means that you need to be providing something that that audience would like to have. Then it's very easy to keep them. It's when people feel that their needs are no longer met that they move away from an organization or a structure, or simply turn the dial to another radio station. So people will find a home where they get something from. I'm quite aware of some of the closures of radio stations. I think very much, as is the case in the nonprofit sector, radio stations fall in that category. It's one thing to have a passion for a specific issue and to start a nonprofit or to start broadcasting because you feel passionate about it, but that's not enough. A radio station is a business and enterprise like any other. And that means that people not only need to have a passion for what they're doing and the technical skills to be able to operate a radio station, but they must also have the business management skills to be able to manage that business. So when it comes to things like managing finances, somebody might be a great broadcaster. They might be very passionate about their community and rendering a service to that community. But if they are unable to manage the business, manage the finances, the people, the resources in the business, it will not last very long because passion, unfortunately, does not pay the rent. So I think one of the things that, the MDDA could consider is together with its grant-making facility to also make business training available to people starting out community stations or operating existing radio stations. And this could be spread across virtually anybody in that radio station. You know, with a small community radio station, the station manager is very often also the main broadcaster and very often the accountant as well, and then does marketing as a sideline. So your resources are very limited, and it's very much the same as when you start a peer support group in a community for people with disabilities. So I would draw on that knowledge and information to start a project where people can access business management training so that they are actually able to manage the business successfully and not only work on passion and the desire to do something. So in short, keeping the audience is a case of offering people what they need. And secondly, to maintain a radio station would require business management in addition to technical knowledge and a passion for what you are doing.
Thank you, Honorable Kubega. I think on my side, Ms. Clark, it's just to go back to this point that you've just raised at the end. I think a very important point, the passion versus the ability to sustain the radio station. But throughout the interaction we've had with you, you've emphasized access as a right. How, and I'm saying this, that you look at it outside of what the norms of the MDDA are in looking at applications. What will be your own perspective in trying to balance that access that you've been talking to as a right enshrined in the Constitution versus the sustainability of those community media platforms, especially now there's also the digital side that has also come in which impacts on your traditional media platforms in terms of community media. So that's sustainability versus the access. How do you strike that balance so that the community media can still thrive going into the future, even with the digital that has come into the space? That's the point I would want you to just elevate for the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maneli. Firstly, the issue of passion versus ability, to me, are not excluding things. They are the same thing, but the one must be sustained through knowledge. You know, in any operation, there is what's referred to as the KSA, the knowledge, the skills, the ability. And without training, no matter how passionate people are, they simply do not have sufficient information. In my experience, I've been a trainer since 1997, and in my experience, I found that when you allow people to absorb some information, some knowledge, and then allow them to practice that so that it becomes a habit. They say it takes 28 days to make or break a habit, as many smokers have found out in recent months. But I can see there's some smokers around when I look at the smiles on faces.
You are smart.
But, you know, when somebody practices something, it becomes a habit. It becomes something they do almost automatically. And that is explained in things like the five levels of learning and so forth. So passion will sustain, but it's a short-term thing, whereas ability, knowledge, skills, ability is something that is taught and that must be maintained over a period. And that's why I refer to both startups as well as existing media companies, because just because you've been around for a year or 2 years or 5 years does not mean that you are effectively managing the business. So that in terms of passion versus ability. When you talk about sustainability versus access, again, I don't see the two as being exclusive of each other. Accessibility, and you're quite right, I'm very passionate about it, because it is one of the most basic rights of people with disabilities, in fact, of all South Africans. So to me, accessibility does not have to be an expensive thing. It does not have to be something that is going to place a risk to the sustainability of a local media or a community media outlet, but rather something that will enhance it. You know, earlier we had a question asked by Honorable Kubeka about how do you retain an audience? And you retain an audience by offering something that they want. And if your community radio station offers accessibility, or if the provincial television station offers accessibility through subtitling, they will attract an audience because people will flock to where they are able to get information in the most accessible format for themselves. How would you marry those two? Very easily. By actually asking people with disabilities what it is that they need, what it is that they want. And there's a big difference between need and want. You know, in our sector, the disability sector, there's an old saying that says nothing about us without us. So when it comes to sustainability versus accessibility, the two marry very easily, but I do think that the MDDA would require the help, the input, from people with disabilities themselves, and the disability sector is organized sufficiently that that can be accessed at a low cost.
Thanks. Let's just make sure that the members that those are joining and our guests, just make sure that your mic is muted so that the background doesn't disrupt the meeting. Once again, as I said, thanks. You've responded to questions asked by honourable members. I will now afford you a one-minute opportunity to make your departing point to the committee, and we can then close this interview. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Firstly, I would like to thank you for the opportunity that I was afforded to actually speak to you. And regardless of whether my nomination is successful or not, I trust I've said something about disability that will make all of you think a little differently about people with disabilities. And if that's the case, then I feel I've achieved quite a lot already, because you are in a position to influence the way other people think. I'd also like to ask to thank the members of the subcommittee who have asked some very thought-provoking and very difficult questions. Thank you for the preparation that went into it to ask the good questions. And then again, I'd like to remind you that the right of access to information is not a nice gift to give to a person with a disability. It's a right. So thank you very much. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thanks. As I said, we have come to the end of the interview, and I can tell you that what I said in the beginning would have been achieved in the interaction. And a number of us, as honorable members, we now also know how to champion better what people with disabilities are faced with out there. And I think together we can be able to change the perceptions in society.
Chair, may I just add right at the end, thank you for the friendliness and hospitality with which I was greeted. You've made it a really interesting interaction. And then I'd also like to thank Tim Nkosi and his team for the arrangements made, because often it's difficult to get these things done. He will tell you that I was very surprised to get a phone call from him on Sunday. I thought I was the only person working, but in fact, he was working as well. So please thank the staff as well for their arrangements.
They are listening, and they hear that it's from the bottom of the heart that you are thanking them for doing their job in that scope. But as I said,
it's the way in which the job is done, not that the job is done.
So I think, as I said, we have come to the closure, and we really thank you for making time. And that from here, the administration, Thembi Nkosi and the team, will be the ones who do further interaction. As far as the subcommittee is concerned, we'll be continuing with the interviews and hear other candidates. Once again, thank you.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant afternoon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, bye. So, Thembi, you'll prepare us for the exit and introduction of the other.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, members. As Mr. Marina Clark is exiting, we have just been joined by Mr. Edwin Naidu, who is our second candidate for the day. And Mr. Naidu is aware of how this committee is proceeding, and he has joined.
Yeah. Just sort out the staff speaking back to us.
Was it from you, Chair?
Yeah, as you were speaking, your voice was like doubling up. I'm not sure if other members were experiencing the same. Honorable McKenzie, I see your hand is up. Honorable McKenzie, your hand is up.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just on a technical issue, for example, when I'm looking at my screen now, all I can see is two pictures of you in like different pictures. Now I can see Thembi Nkosi, but still, so there's no camera movement. I can't see any of the other members. I could see Ms. Clark in a still picture coming and going and coming and going. Like here, I can see you now, Chairperson, but still in a still picture, no movement. But the voices are fine, but the cameras aren't working. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Maybe just before you unmute the candidate, can you just check on that, Thembi? Yeah, I can give you a minute. We'll start at 15:55. So also asking the member to check if there may be other things on his side.
All right.
But I do know that Honorable McKenzie, most members keep the rule that if they are not on the platform, they would usually switch their cameras off and then put them on as they speak, to also allow us to have a better connection. But as I say, Thembi Nkosi, we'll start at 15 to 5. then you can let in the candidate.
Okay.
I can hear you are talking, but I'm losing, yes?
Sorry, Chairperson, with your
I'm saying I can't hear you properly. You are raising something.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, clear.
Okay. Yeah, so for example, I mean, the same situation exists. I can, you know, unless it's a bad connection in the West, or is it a bad connection on my side? If it's my side, maybe I can do something about it.
Okay.
Just a quick question on other members. Are they experiencing the same issue? Are they fine on their side, so that we can see whether it's a connection issue, or it's just the platform issue?
Okay.
No, we are fine, Chairperson. I'm not experiencing any problems.
Kumbu, I can see one.
No, I'm not experiencing any problem, Chair. I'm fine.
Okay.
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Faku.
Chair,
I thought it's you, because I see you are also trying to speak. Honorable Kubega.
Yes, on my side, it was that thing of doubling voices, actually.
Okay, so it's you can hear Honorable McKenzie, fine. Not the power. Yes.
The Eastern Cape, okay.
You
see, Chair, like there, instead of seeing the speaker, I saw Honorable Majosi sort of frozen. Now you're back laughing a little bit, but kind of half frozen. I've just checked my speed, Chairperson. I have 120 megabits per second download and 19 megabits per second upload. So I've got a very good speed here.
Yes. And it seems probably those who are slow are now hitting on your speed. But that's not what I'm saying. Tembengosi and the team, can you sort us out so that we can then let the candidate in?
Chief, if it wasn't lockdown, I would invite you to come and live with me and share my internet.
I think ICT is here, Mr. Kasama, but like he was doing the check, Chairperson, that... all of us, except for Mr. McKenzie, seem not to have a connection problem. So, but maybe ICT, if you can try maybe and give Mr. McKenzie a call off camera and then see if you can assist him.
Okay. All right.
Okay. If that's the case, should... Pardon? Oh, now I'm gone again. No? Yes. Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me, Chair?
I hear you.
Yes, I can. Okay. It seems that Gauteng is under siege today. I was saying, let us give Honorable McKenzie Chair 2 minutes and then we can reconvene.
Okay. Why is ICT upset the matter?
Yes. The only way I could assist is to just request Honorable McKenzie to just hang up and then rejoin the meeting, and then we see how the connection is working, because it seems like it's on his side, this issue that we're having. Other members are still fine. I'm also not experiencing any issues from my end.
Okay. As Honorable Faku would have suggested, we allow this in the 2 minutes we have. And then reconnect. I'm sure it also allows a bit of stretch for members who are not on the platform. Yes.
As members are stretching for the 2 minutes of Mr. McKenzie, and just safe to say that the candidate has already joined. So in your discussion, just be mindful of that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. No, as I say, we'll start exactly at 4.
At least the West looks okay.
No, and I don't have at the high speed on this one. Just like the broadband.
160 megabits per second. You're operating on 12, sir.
As long as the world is safe, we are safe.
Eastern Cape is well represented. The Eastern Cape is well represented in East London and in Cape Town, Honorable Fav.
And in Gauteng.
And in Gauteng and everywhere.
As long as the world is covered, we are covered.
So, no, I just hope that will be finished before that crunch time when the winds are starting.
And then the west,
the west will be in trouble.
I'm ready to take over as a chair at 9 o'clock when that those strong winds in Johannesburg.
I'll make sure that by that time we're done. There's no space for any cool today.
He's not leaving Gauteng. He lives outside of Gauteng. When we go to West Rand, everybody envies to go to Gauteng. He can't just figure me in Johannesburg. He does not live in Gauteng. He lives outside of Gauteng.
And you call him a good day, Timos.
No, we have a bit of Northwest Gauteng. You know, it's the old Transvaal, if you want to do that.
Sorry, Chair. Mr. Ngoma, may you please just check on Mr. Honorable Mackenzie, please, and see if he's having any issues, because I don't see him dialing in anymore. So just see if he's having any issues. I don't have his number. That's why I can't give him a call.
I'm on it.
Okay.
The network is better in Lusikisiki today.
We are yet to see if it will sustain. No.
I see we in KZN, there's no problem in the house.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Everybody, thank you, Chair.
Okay. Sorry. Before the West disappoints you, let's just make sure that we have the connection of the candidate. The candidate, that's Mr. Edwin.
Mr. Naidu?
Yes, Mr. Erin Naidu. Just taking my note properly here. That's Mr. Naidu. Okay. Is he connected?
Yes, Chair. Hi, Edwin.
Good afternoon, Honorable members.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. He's connected. Let me, Honorable members, let's just reconvene again. We must start by apologizing for keeping you waiting a bit. We're just making sure that there can be a flow in the interview and that all members are able to participate. We hope you understand that. We also want to thank you for making yourself available to interact with the committee. This is the subcommittee of the Portfolio Committee on Communications in the National Assembly, as provided in our rules. A portfolio committee can put up a subcommittee that focuses on a particular matter, and therefore the focus of this subcommittee is the appointment process for the MDDA board members, of which tonight you've been nominated for, hence your appearance before this subcommittee. And this subcommittee therefore reports to the main committee. As we will be proceeding, maybe just clarify quickly, that we will afford you an opportunity to introduce yourself briefly, and you will infuse your presentation as part of that introduction. This would happen immediately after I have briefly introduced the members that will be interacting with you this afternoon. And these members, after your presentation, will then have an opportunity to interact with you, each member looking at 5 minutes maximum. And that 5 minutes takes into account the questions asked as well as your responses in the 5 minutes. If we have an understanding on that, I will not waste any more time. But just to quickly introduce the members, we have Honorable Kubeka. Honorable Kubeka, you are still connected? Honorable Kubeka. That's Honorable Kubeka. Honorable Mackenzie, you can see him on top there.
Thank you, Chair.
Then Honorable Faku. That's Honorable Faku. Then we have Honorable Gumbu. We also have Honorable Majozi. Honorable Majozi. We needed to have Honorable Pambo, who's not with us, but we are able to proceed given the numbers. Honorable Maneli, as you can see, chairing the session. So these are the members that will be interacting with you this afternoon. I now welcome you once again and allow you now space to briefly introduce yourself and infuse the presentation. I can assure you now that members also had an opportunity of looking at your detailed CV as submitted to the members. But that's now an opportunity to briefly introduce yourself. Over to you, Mr. Naidoo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for this opportunity to chat with you. And basically, a brief background of mine, I'm an experienced media and communications person. You know, I've worked for a number of print publications.
Just so that you your camera on, I'm struggling to see you. We can hear you.
But, okay.
That's for purposes of those that are following.
Am I there? That okay.
Yes.
Okay, is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, basically, yes. Am I clear? Are you able to see?
Yeah, it's going to get better as we move, I think.
Okay.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I'm privileged to be able to chat with you about positions on the MDDA board. As I mentioned, I'm an experienced media and communications professional. I've worked for a number of newspapers, you know, The Star, The Sunday Independent, Tribune, ETV. I've done work on Capricorn FM and Radio 786. I've also had the opportunity to do PR for National Geographic, and also, you know, work in business banking with Nedbank. I've done also extensive media training something like 300 members of the banking group. I've also had a stint with the Film and Publications Board as an examiner, and I'm currently a commissioner on a part-time basis with the BCCSA. So, you know, I've had a very varied career in journalism spanning something like maybe 30 years. I've also contributed to 2 books on Nelson Mandela and was a correspondent for Bloomberg BNA, and I still write on education. I still do work on gender, and I've also been to Oxford and US on scholarships. And in my presentation, I've included links to a number of recent stories that I'm very proud of that I've done on gender in media in Africa, which, you know, has inspired me to continue taking the subject further. So, you know, in terms of my presentation, I do understand that, you know, and subscribe to the view that a free and independent and diverse media is a key pillar of democracy. In assessing the role, I believe that, you know, we should look at where we've come from. And, you know, prior to democracy, media was used as a government mouthpiece, a propaganda tool. You know, we can't forget that the National Party established clandestine operations and, you know, established the citizen newspaper. But there were some media, you know, editors at the forefront of change that were fearless. you know, the Rand Daily Mail, later Zwelakhe Sisulu at New Nation, Max Dupree at Freya Weekblad, you know, Anton Harbert and Erwin Manoim at Mail and Guardian, Muxin Williams at the South, etc. But, you know, post-democratic South Africa requires us not to go down that road, although we've seen examples of attempts to do so. But, you know, when we're talking about diversity, in terms of content, we need different levels of leadership. You know, there's no one-size-fits-all. We need training and content that considers...
Honorable Kubeka, sorry, Ms. Naidoo.
No problem.
Now he's lost on my side with the voice. I can't hear anything at the moment.
Okay.
We'll ask ICT to help in the background. Can you hear now, Honorable Kubeka, as I speak?
Yes, I can hear now. But on his side, it seems like there's a technical problem. I don't know.
Okay, let's hear when he continues, if you are able to hear now.
Okay, so... Yes, I was talking about, you know, post-democratic South Africa requires us not to go down that route, but, you know, to ensure that there is diversity in content. We need different levels of leadership for that, and there's no one-size-fits-all, you know. You need training and content that considers context of urban and rural audiences. And I think, you know, when you talk about MDDA, the key thing that comes to mind is ownership. It has been in white hands. Foreign owned as well. We've seen that changing slowly, but we've also got to guard against fronting. I think, you know, there must be true ownership of media, and employment definitely must reflect the demographics. I think the MDDA can guide and steer the national conversation in this regard, and it has a crucial role to play. In line with the constitutional imperative to provide for freedom of expression and access to information, the role of the MDDA is aligned to the NDP vision, and that's, you know, helping to create efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure by assisting community media to harness the power of that evolving landscape. I think, you know, you've seen that with the number of changes in recent weeks, where you've had media houses like Associated Publishing, you've seen Caxton closing down its print division. So there definitely is, you know, a dire need for media in communities to be established, to take up the cudgels to ensure that we are giving voice to the voiceless. And I think you find that the key challenge, well, is developing accessible, transformed, diversified media through redress. And one of the things is, you know, you're building communities through locally owned news and controlled platforms that focus on, you know, vulnerable groups, women, children, particular focus on child rights and people with disabilities. I think, you know, over the last, when I mentioned earlier, the last few weeks I've been doing stories on women and gender in the continent. Those we've also done South Africa, and, you know, women throughout Africa are marginalized. In newsrooms, they come out second best. They earn worse than men, and it's a culture that's got to change. And it's also about ensuring that in communities you're able to build and uplift women so that they also become the credible voices that we don't see that they are in communities. Yes, there are many shining examples in South Africa of women doing well, but on the continent and in our communities, you see media still being very much a male-focused world. And I think, you know, we've got a role to play in bridging the gender gap. And, you know, the key thing is, a key role for the MDDA is creating awareness about what it does and showing how people can access it, you know, how you access funding. And when you talk about funding, in terms of the role, I do understand that it's, not there's no open pot of money to be funding media initiatives. You've got to raise that money through partnerships. You've got to work with different players, for example, statutory bodies from Department of Communications, universities, even schools, and, you know, private sector. So I think, you know, the goals of the MDDA are in line with the mission to develop media, to raise new voices, reflect transformation and diversity in media. And of course, you know, the great thing is, well, the most important thing is accountability. You know, we've got to be inclusive. There's got to be integrity of the projects and professionalism. But above all, accountability to ensure that the projects that MDDA supports, you know, derive value for the community and, of course, play a part in terms of what it does for the media landscape in general. Excuse me. So I think, you know, looking at the current context and outlook, since it was formed in 2003, the MDDA has helped transform the media landscape in South Africa. There's no doubt about that. There's been tremendous progress, particularly in indigenous communities, but there's potential to grow it further. And, you know, for me, it's about creating jobs by doing this, growing local economies, and bearing in mind, you know, there is a budgetary constraint because there's no open pot of money, as I said. And when the MDDA was formed, it had funding from the four print media groups. That's now stopped, putting pressure on MDDA to obviously raise money and to ensure that it's able to fund projects that can make a difference. So, you know, when looking at the role of MDDA and the current context, I see that, you know, last year it achieved 80% of its targets. It organized a summit of more than 200 stakeholders and, you know, approved 28 community and small commercial projects. So that's very good, and particularly reaching 7 million listeners or 25% of the country. So, you know, definitely the media is changing. There's room with the opportunities of 4IR to look at how it can play a part in content generation, how it can play a part in helping broaden the ambit of reaching communities throughout the country. So while I know that there is turbulence in the media, I see the MDDA's role is to explore opportunities to amplify and increase its footprint through partnerships, through, you know, as I mentioned earlier. And I think, you know, the key thing that one can't ignore as part of this role, in fulfilling its role, you've got to be mindful that there's been challenges over the last 8 years or so in terms of how it manages its finance, so that there's a need for a better eye in terms of risk, so that, you know, the organization itself, there's no squandering of money, so that every money put into a project yields dividends, because when you squander money, you're obviously not reaching the people that you want to benefit from MDDA. So I think, you know, it's about tightening up risk measures, making sure that there's better advocacy outreach on projects that we supported or that are supported, and show communities how they can shape these ideas or apply and, you know, improve on research on media, looking into examples, and maybe also in ensuring that these examples look beyond our borders to see how's it being done, if it's being done in Africa as well. So in concluding, honorable members, I'd like to say that, you know, notwithstanding, there have been positive changes since the birth of the MDDA, but there are still challenges. And as I see, challenges are opportunities, and funding is definitely a concern. And also, you know, it's an opportunity. And if you recall, you know, while doing this presentation, I couldn't help but go back to a speech that was done by former President Mandela on the 27th of October 1995, when he spoke about how media can transform. And this was maybe like 7 years before the MDDA was born, where he talked about foreign investment can stimulate a diverse opportunities for Black South Africans, but it can also entrench monopoly. We've got to guard against that. He said there was nothing wrong in foreign investment, but it depends on how that advances the cause of diversity and empowerment. And I think, you know, there's been nuggets of great things done. If you look at the MDDA reports and stuff, there's great publications throughout the country that one can be proud of, you know, in Zulu, in Xhosa, in people with disabilities producing magazines as well. So I think, you know, in serving communities, expertise must be transferred to ensure, you know, editors on mainstream publications should be working, should be taking their skills to communities to inspire the next generation, because nothing is forever in terms of If you're an editor now, you're not going to be there forever. But if you impart your skill, that's actually a good thing. I leave you the quote from President Mandela. Above all, black intellectuals are called upon to take more active part in debates within society. They are called upon to take an interest in journalism, for it does not assist the cause of diversity if black intellectuals are seen to be passive in national discourse. And if journalists are seen to abandon the profession in large numbers, it does not help the cause if black entrepreneurs do not develop an interest in the media industry. Thank you for giving me this hearing, honorable members.
Thank you, Mr. Naidu, for the presentation. Indeed, we'll now allow members to interact with your presentation. As it is the norm, I will start with Honorable Kumbu, followed by Honorable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you, and I'm sure Mr. Naidu does hear you. Yes,
I can hear.
Good afternoon, Mr. Naidu.
Good afternoon, sir.
And how are you?
No, doing good, thank you. Lockdown has been hectic.
I was trying to listen to your presentation. I want to find that you were quite prepared. So I'm just having two questions for you.
Sure.
You say, Mr. Naidu, as a person who is coming from the communication background, if you can just explain to me what could be the role of the MDDA in promoting community media in a digital environment. That's the first question. The second question, I just want to get your understanding of the media freedom. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kumbu. Mr. Naidu.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Member. Well, basically, let me start with the second one first, if you don't mind. Media freedom is basically the opportunity for media to express itself, to be able to report freely on issues of public importance, to be able to tell stories, you know, without fear, without being influenced or victimized. It's the freedom to report on government, report on business, report on society. I think I'm going to give you a short answer because there's also a long intellectual debate, university type answer. But, you know, it's the freedom to be able to express yourself in media, in news, and to tell stories without fear or favor. That's the second one. The first question, if I get it correctly, is how digital can influence or can be used in communities. Am I correct?
Yeah, I just want to explain to me what could be the role of the MDDA in promoting community media in a digital environment.
Okay. No, sure. I think, you know, if you consider newspapers, if you consider the whole challenges in print industry right now, there's been a heavy drop in circulation. That's because a lot of media is actually being run via or driven via social media. Now, if you look at anything that you read in today's paper was on social media yesterday. So this creates an opportunity, I think, for the MDDA to actually find platforms that it can take to communities to set up little, you know, media networks. Don't have to be like in the traditional days when I started, when there was printing press, you know, printing out newspapers and delivering. You see the person selling at the street corner, etc. I used to deliver papers as a boy growing up with my brother. You know, I don't see that happening anymore. It's deprived youngsters of revenue, for one, but we have to find ways in which you get society to look at how we're going to tell stories differently using your mobile. So the MDDA has a challenge in that It's got to encourage news telling. And I think, you know, for me, it's about education. There's got to be a huge emphasis on educational outreach. And maybe it starts with schools. I think a lot of journalists will tell you that they got into journalism because they used to read. So we need to learn to, or we need, as MDDA, it needs to be promoting reading, a reading culture. Reading leads to a desire to want to become like the person you see presenting the news on TV or, you know, someone on a TV news show. So the MDDA definitely has a great role to play, drawing on technology, drawing on, you know, everyone talks about 4IR, but the challenge is for MDDA even is how do you make the 4IR touch someone in a rural township, area where the technology is slow. So yes, there is scope for digital in communities, but that's got to come with, you know, everyone talks about more spectrum, 5G. When that happens, and obviously when it's cheaper, I think the MDDA can play a better role there. But at the moment, you know, we still have in communities, in rural communities particularly, there is opportunity for print to encourage that literacy, to encourage that reading, to encourage people to get into writing. So digital is the future, but we're evolving there, and maybe we can't rush, but we've got to have that as part of the planning. You know, MDDA has got to say, this is what's the future all about, and this is how you evolve into that. So you have digital magazines, you know. There's free platforms like ISU, I think, or IS. It's a funny way to pronounce it, but you get the one of the weekend papers on it, and lots of magazines as well. So I hope I've answered your question there, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie, followed by Honourable Flatley.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to Nadia. I must say, I've just sent a message on the committee WhatsApp, but all the pictures are in perfect high definition, so I can see you all looking quite magnificent today. Ms. Nadia, I particularly like the color of your shirt.
thank you.
You would be here as I wear my red
tie. Honorable Mackenzie. That color must not distract you from what...
No, Chairperson, it's I see behind Tembin Nkosi the big red curtains, so I feel comforted. I would just like to put it on record, Chairperson, that I'm the only one wearing a tie to the interview, I'm just saying. Mr. Naidu, thanks very much for coming through, and it's quite a track record you have. Just a quote from your presentation, you were talking about media in terms of being free and independent. Mm-hmm. Now, given that the MDDA is financed by the fiscus, and the fiscus is under control of the ruling party, when we did some oversight visits in the last term to some local community radio stations in Vembe, for example, in Limpopo, the community is very tight-knit, very closed, very essentially homogenous, and its political and traditional leadership is well-established and well-accepted. So governance is solid in a community like that. Now, he who pays the piper calls the tune. So clearly, if my annual check is coming from the government, I'm going to be, as a radio station operator, going to be more inclined to give the local mayor or the local councillor some airtime, some free airtime to put his message forward. This is very important as we're coming into local government elections. And that's why your use of free and independent was quite important. As a now my party, let's say my party is the EFF, if I need to go and campaign in the Vembe district, how would you, as a director of the MDDA, communicate to your owners that political neutrality is so important, and how would you enforce it, especially coming up to elections?